The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Gentlemen, let's get down to business.
Can you dig it?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Q. You are listening to us on 1280 AM KYRO, the blowtorch of the Midwest. My name is Mark Lynn, and this is The Q. Check it out at theqnow.com every single week. Also, we've got a great show for you, and I am bringing on someone to start to help me with the show, a moderate-minded individual like myself who is, well, he has been on the show. He is world-renowned. He is one of the most famous individuals who's ever existed on The Q Show between the hours of noon and 2 on 1280 AM KYRO on Saturdays on odd months. that gentleman is by the name of Die Mofo, Justin Deming. What's going on, Mofo?
What's going on, Mark? Glad to be back on The Q.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me on The Q today. And this is the first of many times that you're going to be joining me on The Q. Justin is going to be taking care of some of the news aspects, and I'm going to crack wise with you guys out there as we try to do things to improve The Q Show for whatever it can be. Now, let's get right into it right now, Justin. Right off the bat, we've got a great show today. We have Aaron Perlett of Elastic Agency coming on to talk about rallystl.org. That's going to be in the second half of the first hour here. But for right now, it's just you and me in the top of the news. The top of the news. And what is the big news story this week?
Well, what everyone in Washington is talking about is the fiscal cliff, the quote-unquote fiscal cliff. We have John Boehner, even election night, drawing a line in the sand for the Republicans. We have the president reelected with a mandate, with a stronger Senate majority, and it's all leading, even the day after the election. The big news now is this fiscal cliff that we're heading towards, January 1st.
All right. Well, January 1st is the fiscal cliff, as they are talking about, but this fiscal cliff isn't – okay, let's put this in perspective, Justin.
Let's do
for
it.
For all of my regressives out there who are just, we hate Obama because we reelected him and we're still butthurt and the world's coming to an end. Oh. Let's really put this into perspective for everybody. Nothing is going to happen with this fiscal cliff. They're going to come to some type of amiable agreement probably hours or days before it would happen. The word fiscal cliff, by just adding the word cliff on there, it's almost like, oh my God, everything's coming to a part. It's all going to fall into the ocean. It's not. It never has. In fact, if you remember a couple of years ago, every single year, Justin, the budget – and, you know, I love this. I don't understand why this is the way it is, but every single year, the budget comes due for the United States government, and every single year – the Speaker of the House, the head of the Senate, the Vice President, and the President get into a little room. They put a piece of paper in front of them that says, this is what the budget for the government was last year. This is what the budget is for the government this year. Sometimes it fluctuates up. Sometimes it fluctuates down. But every single year, it's almost right around the same amount. And if there is an increase, they show it's because of inflationary costs in general across the board. Now, with that being said, here's what happens. They put the little piece of paper down. Everybody signs off on it. It takes them 3 seconds, and they all walk out of the room, and they're like, we're good for another year. Every year this happens. Well, last year, it didn't happen. If you remember last year, the whole John Boehner thing situation popped up.
The debt situation.
That's where the whole government was going to shut down at the last minute, and literally they had 2 to 3 weeks of the same paper they put year after year going back to before John F. Kennedy on the desk. And for the first time, the first – go around of this piece of paper being on the desk, the Republicans refused to sign it. John Boehner claimed as the head of the House, I refuse to sign it. And then they reworked it a little bit, but pretty much put the same piece of paper on the table 8 times in a row. The guy refused to sign it every single time. All of a sudden it got to 24 hours before the government was technically supposed to shut down. And what happens? He immediately signs it. They all got up in arms about it, and rightfully so, because when it came right down to it, the piece of paper that John Boehner signed on the 9th time was the exact same stuff that was put in front of him the first day on the first piece of paper. He literally explained to the president at that point, we're doing this because we just don't like you. We're against you. We don't want to work with you. It's not because the numbers made any less or more sense. This is the problem I got, Justin. This is what this fiscal cliff thing is going to become. But see, the problem is they got now is he's already been reelected. It's done. It's in the books.
Oh, yeah.
They can't unelect him. They can't change it now. That's why immediately John Boehner was like, okay, Mr. President, now we're willing to work with you.
Well,
yeah, because they were positioning. They were positioning themselves to try to get him knocked off the perch.
Boehner and the Republicans are still drawing a pretty hard line. There's been some movement, but they still have the House. They have less of a majority than they had, but they do still have the House. This whole fiscal cliff, in fact, comes from that debt ceiling crisis that, as you mentioned, the Republicans completely manufactured in an attempt to hurt Obama politically, to give him no success. That's what half of it comes from. The other half was from the lame duck session of Congress after the 2010 midterms. So, you know, this debt ceiling, here's the problem for Republicans this time. It's not like the debt ceiling debate where the federal government will shut down. Basically, after January 1st, the Democrats really only have more leverage because at that point, all of the Bush tax cuts expire. And then it will be a matter of rather than, you know, at this point, the debate is rather to just extend tax cuts for the middle class. After January 1st, all the tax cuts expire for the middle class, for the wealthy. At that point, we'll just be talking about doing a new tax cut for the middle class.
And I encourage people out there listening to the show to hit us up at the Q Now on Twitter. Go to Facebook.com. Go to theqnow.com or go to theqnow.com. We have our Facebook. We have our Twitter things there. Click on the Facebook and the Twitter things. Hit us up. We have a contact page. Let us know what you guys think about this. You know, like you just said, Barack Obama has strong-armed the situation to the point of I'll let the Bush tax cuts go. He said it flat out yesterday. I will let them crash into the ground off of your fiscal cliff all day long if you're not going to play ball with me. Because you want those Bush tax cuts because they help you rich guys at the top of the food chain out. They really do. They do help all of us out. But the guys at the top of the food chain, they really benefit from those Bush tax cuts. He's willing to let it crash into the ground if these guys are not willing to come to some amiable middle ground that they need to work with each other on.
I think it's a great political strategy, even for the Democrats at this point. There are two ways of looking at it. This fiscal cliff isn't necessarily a cliff. The results of it could be disastrous for the economy, but not immediately. It's really only if it drags on for weeks or months, because you could look at it January 1st, basically what goes into effect, $400 billion in tax increases, $200 billion in spending cuts, half military, half domestic. That's $600 billion that would, you know, disappear from the economy, be a huge drag. Or you could look at it as on January 1st, the total spending cuts and tax increases would be $1.6 billion, and then another $1.6 billion on the second, another $1.6 billion on the third, et cetera, meaning, you know, we're not really falling off a cliff. It will be the cumulative effect if they don't take care of that early in January, in the first few weeks. It's if it drags on and on that the economy really starts feeling the hit. So the Democrats, unlike the debt ceiling, they don't really have their back against the wall on this one. What's interesting, too, is that to admit that this is even a problem, the Republicans are basically admitting to, you know, Keynesian economics, basically admitting that, you know, a huge drop in deficit spending would be bad for the economy, would crash for the economy. So all the Republicans, all this doomsday naysaying, even the metaphor fiscal cliff, they're kind of admitting that we need deficit spending in the slowed economy.
Right, and that is what we need in this slow economy. There needs to be some deficit spending. There needs to look like these guys, they don't, and I'm not knocking. Listen, all my friends who are conservative, who have come on my radio show, all my friends that are, you know, we know conservative guys. And I'm a moderate. I'm willing to – I told you last week on my show when we had on Drew from the John and Drew show as well as Travis Cook. I'm willing to have myself swayed. Like I don't have a problem with being swayed at all ever across the board on anything at all, Justin. being swayed is what I'm about. It's not a problem. I don't have a problem voting Republican or Democrat as long as it's making sense for the overall. And they don't get the idea that we're all of you rich people are scared and you've created this self-scaredness. Perfect example. Justin, did you hear about Papa John's?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you hear the Papa John's situation? Okay. Papa John, the guy who owns Papa John's, and I don't have his name directly in front of me, but
John
I know the story very
Shatner,
well.
I would say. Yeah.
John Shatner or Shatler or whatever his name is. Yes. Okay. Papa John's, he has decided that he's going to raise his pizzas 50 cents per pizza across the board, which is fine. His example and his argument is to offset the cost of Obamacare. Yet, last year, during Super Bowl time, he gave away 2 million free pizzas at 10 bucks plus a pop. That's $20 million. Uh-huh. So the amount of money that he's physically raising at 50 cents a pop is nowhere close to how much he just gave away last year for free at the Super Bowl. And he's trying to argue that it's because of Obamacare. And my problem with this is that you guys have just scared yourself into this position that the world, the sky, it's Chicken Little. The sky is falling. It's always the sky is falling. And right now, the sky is falling because of Obamacare. And you don't have an excuse. I would say that this makes sense if you literally, like there was another economist, I think with Forbes magazine, he kind of broke down what John Shatner should do with Papa John's. Uh-huh. And he came down to, I think, a total of 14 cents. I think he said 14 total cents.
3 or 4 cents a pizza it would actually cost him.
Okay, 3 or 4 cents a pizza. But 3 or 4 cents a pizza as opposed to the 50 cent raise he wants to make per pizza. And here's the thing. That's Papa John's. That's his decision. If he wants to raise his pizza prices 50 cents per pizza across the board, I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is you using Obamacare or any of these scare tactics to scare yourself into stupidity. Stop doing that. Don't do that. Don't sit there and beat on a wall and say that the sky is falling when the sky isn't falling. Once the sky starts falling, then you have – listen, nothing's going to come crashing down. Listen, it took months and months for us to enter into the recession. It wasn't just $4 gas prices and the next day the whole economy crashed. No, it was $3.50 gas prices in May, $3.75 gas prices in June, $4 gas prices in July. Then the housing market started to crash because people were getting foreclosed on because they couldn't pay their bills. Like, it wasn't just boom and the next day crash to the ground. And that's where we're at. We're at a point where you guys think January 1st, this goes into effect, and boom, the next day, January 2nd, everything's going to hell. It ain't happening.
Doesn't work.
It's going to take months for you guys to even get influenced. What do you think, Justin?
It's exactly. I mean, when you talk about scare tactics on the, you know, the conservative side, from the John Birch Society up through the Tea Party, that's all that side has been based on. And, you know, I hate to put it so bluntly, but, you know, death panels and all this other nonsense. It's all a steady diet of hate and fear. And it's sad because it prevents us from having a serious discussion about, you know, conservatism versus liberalism, you know, and on through this fiscal cliff situation, you know, they've created this monster and it's not going away and they're not going to be able to scare people into giving the rich another tax cut. You know, Papa John can go out and have all his hurt feelings about an election he lost, but Obamacare will be good for America. Progressives have been trying to resolve health care for over 75 years, and this is the closest we've come. It's not perfect. It's still, you know, it's not a single universal health care system, which also wouldn't be perfect. But, you know, Obamacare is Romney care, is some of conservative ideas of the early 90s. You know?
Well, they really did think, Justin, that if Romney got in as president of the United States, they really honestly believe. And like, listen, I'm not just this staunch liberal. I'm not taking a staunch liberal aspect. Justin is more liberal than I ever will be. Like, he is
for sure
straightforward liberal. Okay, I'm a moderate. I really truly am. I just, at the end of the day, I saw Romney, I saw Barack Obama, and I just saw that it was the same guy, but it was the white guy and not the black. Not to turn this into race, because this isn't a race issue, but He's just the white version of Barack Obama. When Romney would get in, he's going to do the same things. And I really do believe that the Todd Akin thing really kind of put a sour taste into his mouth. It really made him sit there and go, wow, these guys, they really don't care for me, even if they're just a candidate. We're not even talking about House speakers and real power players yet. We're just talking about candidates who haven't even won yet. And this dude's telling him to go F himself. And he's getting away with it. The question at that point is who of power is going to tell you to go F yourself? And I think it really made him unhappy. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I've heard this story of Mitt the moderate who had to, you know, in the primaries, run to the right. The problem with the right wing isn't just that they say crazy things. It's that they say what they believe out loud. You know, what Todd Akin said, he's not an outlier. He's just, you know, the Tea Party movement, which was never, let's get this straight. Tea Party was never a grassroots movement. It was an astroturf movement. It was created with the same corporate funds that created all the Republican super PACs. It was never an independent group. 100% of the Tea Party candidates ran in the Republican Party.
Of course they did.
Tea Party. So it was always
within. And that's because once you get to Capitol Hill, and a lot of people don't realize this, once you get to Capitol Hill, it's a yes or no vote. There is no third vote. There is no third thing you can do. Either you're with the liberals or you're against them. Either you're with the conservatives or you're against them. And it's a yes-no vote on everything. So you can say, I'm not a conservative. I'm a Tea Party guy. But the truth is that when the vote comes down, they're going to say yes or no.
And
if you say yes, you're with the conservatives. If you say no, you're with the liberals.
Mark, and I can do just a long time on third parties and how they're such – a joke right now, but just trying to get back to this, stay on task with this.
Of
course. You know, the Tea Party, the AstroTurf Party, you know, they've created their own monster because they were created by these same Republican corporate donors and Fox News, but they lost control of their own beast. And now, five Senate campaigns in the last two election cycles, 2012 and 2010, that should have been easy Republican pickups. They lost because the Tea Party primaried out these establishment Republicans and, you know, their AstroTurf movement turned on them. And they're running these people who say these crazy things because that's what Republicans believe. I don't think, you know, all of this is to say, you know, when Mitt Romney says Todd Akin should leave the race and Todd Akin says no, that's the, you know, they've created their own monster. But I don't believe in Mitt the moderate. I don't believe, you know, everyone tends to say, oh, Mitt Romney is this good centrist that has to run to the right, has to go to the center, and has to do this, has to do that. You know, Mitt Romney is 100 times the flip-flopper that John Kerry ever was, 100 times the robot that Al Gore ever was. And I'm sorry, Romney is not a lot like Obama. Obama is a person of modest background who excelled, who was able to pull himself up by his bootstraps, like Bill Clinton. He's not one of these Mitt Romney guys, the top 1% of the top 1%, born on third base thinking he hit a triple.
It's one of my famous lines. I love that line.
Well, it's never more accurate than when describing Mitt Romney. So, you know, these people, you know, yes, they've created their own monster, but they're living inside their own bubble. There's sources saying that Mitt Romney was shell-shocked when he didn't win the election.
Oh, I bet he was. I bet he was completely blown away by it. Well, and I'm not knocking him for that. You ran a good fight, man.
But
you really did.
There are things called polls, and they're not just all part of a liberal conspiracy. And that's the main problem the conservative movement has, is that, you know, it's not surprising that the group that is anti-science, anti-math, anti-history was also anti-polling. But, you know, the polls were there. Like, I could see him wanting to win. I could see him seeing a chance to win. But to be shocked that he didn't win when he was never ahead.
When he was never ahead at all. I mean, and that's the thing. They really do listen to Fox News way too much.
Well,
they really do. Like, if Fox News tells them, oh, they have a poll that says that they're ahead, they will run that thing for everything it's worth. And I'm not against that. Fox News does what Fox News does.
So to our conservative friends, I want to say you're welcome to the discussion, but reality is not a liberal conspiracy. And to get back to this fiscal cliff, you know, I welcome us to go right over the fiscal cliff because I think the conversation changes. Right now, we're talking about letting...
What if? We're right, playing what if.
Right now, that's we're all talking we do. About raising the taxes on the wealthy, letting their tax cuts expire. After January 1st, all those tax cuts are gone. We're back in Clinton-era rates. At that point, we're talking about cutting the middle taxes on the middle class. And that's a conversation I welcome. I welcome the Republicans trying to tell all of America, you can't have a tax cut until Mitt Romney gets one too. Especially after the past 10, 12 years of the complete failure of the Bush tax cuts to do one thing that they promised to do.
Now, and that's the thing that I want everybody to realize something, that if you guys would just take a step back, stop playing the sky is falling game. It's not falling. If we go over the cliff, it ain't going to matter. This is not a situation, ladies and gentlemen, and I love you guys to listen to the Q. We have thousands of listeners every week, Justin, that love to hear what we say, and they love to hear our opinions, but we're not idiots. And I don't think that people on the Republican and conservative side are illogical idiots either. I think that we just have different points of view. I think that sometimes those points of view are a little bit more controversial than other times. I think that sometimes we have a different idea of where everything should be going. But I really believe that with like Obamacare and this fiscal cliff, I think we should test things out. I do agree that Obamacare or healthcare reform, which I call it, is good for us as a nation. It really is. But maybe we should test it out in a couple states. I think that that would put some of the BS to rest with the conservatives and the hardline conservatives at that, because what would happen is you try Florida and you try Georgia, or you try a couple of states that are willing to participate on the tester. You do it for 6 to 8 months there, and you see what the cost versions versus the year before and the year before that compared to under Obamacare, how it worked itself out. And if we see that things are just not working themselves out, we have a contingency to offset that problem, and then we don't roll it out nationally. You know what I'm saying? But if it does what I think it's going to do, which everyone is pretty much in agreement that this is a good thing, it's a set of guidelines to take the private sector and force them to spend their money more properly. Well, that's what this is. They think that this – here's the problem. The Republicans, the conservatives, Justin, they have got it in everyone's mind that this is universal health care. They've got everyone believing that this is free health care, that no one's going to have to pay for it, but someone's going to have to pay for it, and that everyone's just going to just go to the doctor whenever they want it. No. No, ladies and gentlemen, this is a health care reform act that has been worked on for 25 years, was attempted by three other individuals, including one of them being Hillary Clinton, over the last 25 years. All three of those individuals backed off of it, and at the end of this president's first term, he actually got the 25-year-old plan that they've been working on slowly through the game and moved forward. That's where we stand with this situation. All right, Justin, we got to take a break here on the queue. We're going to go talk to Aaron Perlett, who is going to be joining us on the phones here in just a minute with Elastic Agency Rally, STL.org. is the website I want everyone to go check out. And don't forget, during this break, check out thequnow.com, theqnow.com, or go check out Justin. He's on Twitter at Dymofo, DeyeMofo.
That's me.
On Twitter, that's where you guys can find out about Justin. We'll be back on the Q and KYRO, WestplexNewsTalk.com after this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Q. Mark Bland, and I am joined by Aaron Perlett. Is it Perlett or Perlett or
Perlett?
It's Aaron Perlett of the Rally STL. Is it? Give him the website real quick, because I'm a little lost on the websites. Is it Rally STL or Go Rally STL or?
Sure, it's the program is it's called Rally St. Louis. The website is rallystl.org.
Okay, so it's rallystl.org. Okay, yeah. So it's Go Rally St. Louis, and I was hipped to this entire situation by a friend of mine who happened to do a post on Facebook. And this is one of those individuals who I respect a lot. You know, whenever he posts something, even if it's something stupid, I'll still read it regardless, because he usually comes across with really interesting, unique stuff. And he posted something about rallystl.org. I went and checked it out. I'm like, wow, like they're trying to do the whole community involvement, rebuilding the city through unique ways. And I was like, that's the kind of stuff I want to promote. And they're not just trying to do it here. They're trying to get it across the United States into other cities, too. So, Aaron, why don't you, if you can, be so helpful here. Give us a little background about how this started, where it's going, and what and kind of what it is.
Sure. I write. I've been working in PR and marketing and broadcasting for probably about 20 years now. And one of the things I do outside of my agency, Elasticity, is I write for Forbes on marketing and PR. And about a year ago, I wrote a piece called St. Louis Doesn't Suck. And it basically was an historical look.
I think I read that, actually.
It was interesting because I write in a very wonky section of Forbes that is for marketers. But, you know, next thing you know, this piece is being read by housewives in St. Charles, Missouri.
I think my buddy Mike over at punchingkitty.com actually picked it up and did a little story about it and how St. Louis doesn't suck. And then through his current of how St. Louis does suck and created its own pro versus con like article.
Yeah, you know, it's very conceivable, and it kind of took a life of its own. But basically the thrust of it was that people outside of St. Louis have no idea what to make of it. It's not necessarily bad or good, but they just don't know what to make of St. Louis. And we've done a terrible job of marketing the city as a great place to live, work, and play in the region.
Can I try for 1 second? Let me throw this out there. Is St. Louis wanting to be Chicago really bad, but just not quite big enough to be Chicago? So we have the attitude of Chicago, but we don't have the look and feel?
Well, it's more about, you know, the fundamental factors that help drive economic development, things like cost of living, quality of education, number of Fortune 1000 employers, and then there's cultural amenities. You know, there's a lot of different aspects that comprise the quality of life somewhere. And we haven't done a good job of telling the outside world our story. So the piece in Forbes kind of caught fire, and we were one of my business partners at Elasticity and I were approached and suggested that we kind of harness that excitement and think about ways that we could, in fact, market the city better and with a unique idea. So we spent about 9 months kind of socializing a concept we came up with, raising capital for it, and we're about to launch it, and it's called Rally St. Louis. And essentially what it is a crowdfunded and crowdsourced marketing platform that anybody can go on and submit an idea as to how to better position Metro St. Louis. Now, that could be, you know, your traditional ad campaign, but it could also be a beautification project along the interstate. You know, it could be an outdoor art exhibit. It could be anything. And those ideas are then voted on. And each month, the top five ideas – we'll have a budget put to them. We have a marketing committee made up of big companies all over town, marketing executives.
And I think we need to build a 5,000 square foot house for radio show host Mark Bland to live in St. Louis to showcase the abilities that we have at creating things for St. Louis. That's what
that's the beauty of it, Mark, is that you could suggest that. And if the crowd agrees with it and they vote for it, we put a budget to it. Then what happens is it is crowdfunded. So just like the Obama
– it's almost like Kickstarter then for like local projects.
That's the part two of it. Part one is the crowdsourcing, like my Starbucks idea or Dell Ideastorm, where people suggest their concepts. And you're exactly right. Part two is the crowdfunding, like Kickstarter or Rocket Hub, where they can actually fund those projects. And it's essentially St. Louisans putting their ideas and then money where their mouth is if they're supportive of a concept. Once an idea then is fully funded, we find a local party, and that local party that is capable of executing the idea, we pay them to do it. It's simple as that.
That's actually a really, really fantastic idea. And a question, are you a native St. Louisan? Are you from St. Louis?
I'm actually not. I'm not a military brat, but I have spent a lot of time moving around. I grew up in Virginia, and I've been here about 7 years. And I think that kind of aided my perspective when I wrote the the St. Louis doesn't suck piece in that I see I'd heard a lot of locals that have been here all their lives really second guessing the city. And I'm thinking to myself, you're crazy. This town has so much to offer, whether you are kind of a young person, young professional, college student, whether you're, you know, an old married fart like me that's got two kids, that it's got a really diverse
that's where I'm at. Section.
Yeah. So
no, I think that people, and I've grown up here. I'm 36 years old. I don't know how old you are, but I'm 36 years old. I grew up here in St. Louis, in North County, in Florissant, in Hazelwood. And one of those, the things that I think people get jaded. You know, I'm one of those people who's actually been lucky enough to have a successful career in media and entertainment, travel around, been to a few other cities. And I'm married to a woman who's from this area. Therefore, we've settled down in St. Louis, even though I don't technically want to. And I've been – everyone knows who listens to this show. I'm not the biggest St. Louis supporter. I don't beat the drum for the Cardinals. I'll second guess them left and right. I think the people just get jaded who grow up here, who live here. And my jadedness, I think, is because when I go to other cities, I see people be nicer. I think I see that. But I think that that's everyone. I think anyone who grows up in a different city and then goes somewhere else, they see some – the things that they feel are lacking in their own city in that other city. I think that's everybody. I mean, you could grow up in Nashville, Tennessee and think it sucks and then come to St. Louis and think it's amazing because you think that it has all the things that Nashville never had, you know? I think that's everybody, and I think it's nice because of a guy who's grown up in this city, who's seen it from day one of his life. I think it's great to see young, smart professionals like yourself and your team over at Elastic going out of your way to create unique ideas and opportunities. I'm blown away by this Kickstarter idea for community involvement. I mean, that's a really smart move. That's a way to increase the overall. And this could be for, like you said, this could be for anything from landscaping and economic growth and development for look, as well as for entertainment and culture and everything.
You know, I couldn't agree with you more. What it comes down to is ideas and grassroots ideas that are really they start with people. And the citizens that want to see themselves representative in a way that's accurate and realistic and reflective of kind of the great things that they know are going on around them. And so it just kind of it provides this sense of democratization with the digital tools we have today that's so fantastic that wasn't possible just 10 years ago. And we're not also doing things from kind of a top-down perspective that you see so often, and it's kind of nauseating. And in this model, to a degree, you're giving up some sense of control of the asylum to the inmates, and that is not a bad thing. You know, it'll be curated, but, you know, you got to let people have a say, because if you look at today's consumer and the way they behave, you know, that sense of too much control gets a really bad reaction. And this kind of gets away from that, which is we hope to be a very positive thing.
Now, as I brought up earlier, you're attempting to maybe move this into some other cities, too. This isn't just a St. Louis idea. You're hoping that it catches root here because this is where you're based so that you can build a little credibility to it. But your eventual plan, if I'm correct, is to try to get it into Chicago and other cities like that across the United States.
Well, you know, we're doing this as a not-for-profit endeavor and here in St. Louis. And, you know, personally, I've spent about a third of my professional time on this over the last 9 months. And I do think that it holds great opportunities for other regions that have similar challenges, whether it's a Detroit or a Cleveland, although Cleveland might be beyond help, with the exception of the mustached American community there. But, you know, I do think it can be repurposed and repeated in other markets, and hopefully it will be. You know, the important thing for us is we want it to be known as starting in St. Louis, that in St. Louis we created this model that's unique and different and progressive.
Okay. All right. Now, you threw something in there, a little caveat I noticed, something about mustachied Americans, some mustachioed gentlemen walking around with some roundy rounds on their face. Tell me a little bit about that. Like, why the mustached line? It was interesting. That's just unique, you know. We're sitting here talking.
Yeah. So most people that are familiar with me know that I created something years ago called the American Mustache Institute, which, of course, is the bravest organization in the history of mankind, behind only the U.S. military and the post Jim Henson Muppets. And
those post Jim Henson Muppets were very brave. Let's just be honest.
It's basically a civil libertarian organization that protects rights of people with facial hair. Because there is a modicum of discrimination against people with facial hair, whether it's in professional realms or in political realms. You know, we haven't had a president in the White House with a mustache since William Howard Taft. We haven't had a major party candidate for president since Thomas E. Dewey in 1948. Our current attorney general is the first attorney general who's been a mustached American since Francis A. Biddle in 1946. See it across the business.
Wait, was Taft after Roosevelt?
Taft was right after Roosevelt.
Yeah, I was going to say. I was like,
office in 1913. So the American Mustache Institute, we're freedom fighters, and we do it with more humor than anything else, because we feel like it. You know, the humor aspect of our message tends to get more traction than anything else, and so that's fine with us as long as they ultimately pay attention to what we're trying to accomplish, and that is a fair playing field for the mustached American people.
Oh, yes. Now, do you see a lot of discrimination towards mustached men
and women?
I'm assuming there might be even mustached women out there.
Well, I mean, if you look at – let's just take Forbes magazine. You know, I mentioned I write for Forbes. Shahid Khan, who's from Illinois, and he was
– Yeah, the guy who was going to buy the Rams or the Blues or whatever it was.
And now
the Blues.
Jaguars. So he was recently on the front cover of Forbes. He's the first mustached American on the front cover of Forbes magazine since 1980s. It is so rare that you find mustached Americans in positions of power.
Considering that they used to be very heavily in power, a lot of mustached men were.
In the 1970s, every man had three things: a perm, a turtleneck, and a mustache. And so, yes, society has changed a lot.
Now, as the purveyors of RallySTL.org, do you feel, and this is, you know, I'm just running down the lines here, Aaron, okay? Do you feel that if there is a purveying idea that can move to stage two of the rally situation, do you feel that that would be better headed by a mustached individual or a non-mustached individual?
I can assure you that Rally St. Louis will have no connectivity to the American Mustache Institute whatsoever.
No. I'm just saying, do you feel that a mustached individual will run the projects better? I'm just asking. It's just curious.
Well, I mean, is there any question? That's like saying, is Prevail cheese a crime against nature?
It is. To be honest, it is. Yeah. You don't mix provolone and mozzarella. You just don't do that.
It tastes
amazing, though. Like, I guess it's like if you kiss a mustached man for the first time, you're like, it always looks so rough, but now it's so delicious. Like, you see what I'm saying? Yeah. I get it. I understand where you're going with this. Well, I'm talking to Aaron Perlett of Elastic Agency here in St. Louis, Missouri, and he's got a brand new idea. RallySTL.org is the website. Go check it out. They are taking ideas, putting them to a board vote. From that board vote, it can be ideas about culture. It can be ideas about the look and feel of a city. And once they do that, they come up with the idea that they want to put a Kickstarter or, as you said, Rocket Hub style. Did you say Rocket Hub?
Rocket Hub and Kickstarter.
Style campaign behind it. And therefore, try to turn it into fruition. Basically, make people put their money where their mouth is when it comes to ideas for the St. Louis area. And he's joining me today. Also, the Taft-loving head of the American Mustache Association. So when you see the guys from Jib Jab, I'm sure you're on the internet a lot. Whenever the guys from Jib Jab do their little Jib Jab presidential things, they always use the mustached men. You know, in fact, I think their logo is the two guys, the old barbershop quartet mustached men. So is there an actor who rocks the mustache better than anyone else that you feel would be the preeminent? Like today, they announced that Channing Tatum is the sexiest man alive. Who is the most mustachied man alive, if I would be so honored to ask?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, it's a very subjective question. I think there's a few that would be on the Mount Stashmore. of Mustache.
Mount Stashmore, yes, yes.
I think, you know, obviously Burt Reynolds is an icon.
I think Burt Reynolds is potentially the icon. He could be the godfather of the mustachied current crop of
people. Yeah, and I think that, honestly, I think the Atlantic magazine the other about a year or two ago talked to me about a top 20 list of the most influential mustaches of all time, and I suggested that actually Walter Cronkite was probably the most influential mustache in American history, because
the bear with the bear hair.
Well, if you think back to the 19, you know, I mentioned the 1970s, all men had three things: perm, a turtleneck, and a mustache. And the reason that so many people had a mustache in the 1970s was because of people like Walter Cronkite. Because if you think about how we got our news in the 70s, it's basically, you know, you read the paper in the morning, listened to the radio on the way to work and back, and then you went home and you watched Walter Cronkite, and he told you what happened that day. And he was a god.
Yeah.
And he
There's no iPhones with a mustache on them. That's exactly all I'm saying. So I respect
Yeah, so I think that Walter Cronkite would be there. I think Martin Luther King would be there, because in the 1980s, when white America deserted the mustache, black America did not. And I think that had a lot to do with the leadership of Dr. King and how respected he remains today in the black community in America.
In the mustache community. And I know that we started talking about Rally, but we've moved to mustache. And I don't want that to get confusing, because the Rally situation is a very important one that I want people to go check out, rallystl.org. Make sure you go and check this out. Read up on it. There's more there than we can literally talk about on the show. Like, there's a lot there. It's an involved process, but it's a genius idea. And Aaron, I'm glad that you and your team have put something together like this. I think that you guys are doing a great thing for the St. Louis community, as well as you move into other communities across the United States. I think you guys have really hit on something that's great. Now, but the mustache thing, I found this out at the last minute. I'm really digging. Is there some form of bigotry towards pencil mustache people or people who fake draw them on? Like, is there if you wear a Vietnam vet patch but you never were in Vietnam, the vets get really angry, almost like a biker gang, and they want to take you out. If someone draws on a pencil thin mustache and it's not Halloween and they rock it as if that's their thing, do you feel that there is some type of disrespect there? Are you guys against that? Do you like that?
No, I don't have a problem with fake mustaches at all. And in fact, every year we have an annual Stash Bash event, charitable event, where we raise money for charity and celebrate the mustached American lifestyle. And we hand out free mustaches to those who are unable to live such a brave lifestyle. So, no, I think it's an honor, and I actually don't think that the pencil thin is looked down upon at all. In fact, you see a lot of black athletes today wearing pencil-thin mustaches.
Have you ever thought about going pencil-thin?
You know, it doesn't really suit my face well, but I've done everything from a Fu Manchu to a horseshoe style to a chevron to a
– To a chevron? I don't even know what a chevron is.
David Axelrod.
Oh, okay. All right. I get it.
Right. It's basically your standard issue police mustache. 97% of all law enforcement agencies in this country issue them. And then I've even done the handlebar, which takes a lot of work because it's a lot of waxing. I don't find anything wrong with the pencil, and it just doesn't suit my face personally.
Now, people hearing our discussion back and forth might get the idea that this is a joke or something that we are, you know, flubbing on. How serious do you take the American Mustache Association?
You know, it's something that I've built, and I'm very proud of what it's become, because it has 20,000 members worldwide. And we have 100,000 unique visitors a month that come to the website. And we've made some real change, everything from changing school board policy in school districts to saving people's jobs. And it's been a great learning tool for me, and it allows me to exercise some wit that I otherwise would not be able to use. I'm very proud of it, and I love what it's accomplished.
Now, don't take it personally. I can't grow facial hair. Like, it would take me to get what probably happens to you over a 1 week period. It would literally take me 10 to 12, maybe 13 months just to get the stubble going right in the right direction and to get to where you're at currently right now, because we're talking. And I'm assuming that you have a nice burly facial hair mustache going on. I mean, if you're the head of the American Mustache Association, you probably rock a real stash.
Right.
So
yeah, right now I got a beard actually for the winter hibernation season.
So, but for me to even get to beard level to where it's noticeable, 5 years, like five solid, straightforward years. It's sad. It's pathetic, but there's no pictures of me with a mustache. But if you invite me to your stash bash, I would love to promote that here on the queue. Next time it comes around, I'd love to promote that on the queue. I'd love to come to the stash bash, be supportive of you guys. And I really, really, really want everyone to understand you need to go check out rallystl.org. That's RALLYSTL.org. Go check that out. A unique idea. I think maybe here at the end of this conversation, maybe, Aaron, my idea would be to American Mustache Museum for the St. Louis area.
Mustache Hall of Fame. We need one.
And then you and me partner on that. We'll build the American Mustache Museum, even though I can't grow facial hair. We'll throw it through the Rally STL situation and see what we can get.
This is the home of the world's largest mustache, the Gateway Arch. So it would that's why the American Mustache Institute is based here, and it would make a lot of sense to have a Mustache Hall of Fame here.
All right. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Aaron Perlett of Elastic Agency, the PR agency in St. Louis, rallystl.org is the name of the website. Aaron, I want to thank you so much for coming on the queue today and talking to me about all of this.
This has been great. Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm honored.
Hey, no problem, man. Anytime you're welcome to come on the queue anytime. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back on the queue right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the queue. Of course, my name is Mark Bland, joined today by Justin Deming, who's going to be joining us a little bit more often here on the show. Thank you so much, Justin, for being here today, sir.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
And we had our friend Aaron Perlett of RallySTL.org on just a few minutes ago while you were out taking care of some other business, Justin. Aaron, awesome idea. This whole thing with did you get a chance to listen to what he was talking about?
I did not.
Okay. Well, the whole RallySTL.org situation is a very simple idea. Basically, people submit ideas and suggestions to do things to benefit the St. Louis region. It's kind of like a crowdfunding, crowdsourcing platform type thing. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
And basically, what it is how do I explain this so well? Perfect example. Okay. He explained it's kind of like Kickstarter, but they have a board of people that choose what the Kickstarter idea will be before it's Kickstarter.
Gotcha.
So like a group of people have an idea to build a specialized style of park in downtown St. Louis, something that's really unique. So they bring it to the board. The board takes a look at the situation. If they agree and they think that it's a good idea and it's something that they want to run with, they turn around and they submit it as an idea for RallySTL.org or the Rally St. Louis Project, okay, which is put on by Elastic Agency here in St. Louis, and Aaron Perlett is the head of that. You would also appreciate him because he is also, and you did not get a chance to hear this, the head of the American Mustache Association, based here in St. Louis. And he's actually been on Neil Cavuto promoting the Stash Act a few years ago that they tried to push through and everything. So you would have totally dug Aaron. And we talked a little bit about that too. But regardless of that, the idea is that they submit the idea, the board votes on it. If the board feels that this is a great idea, then they all get behind it and they create like a crowdfunding Kickstarter style platform to generate funding for this to happen. And then they build up the money and you put your money where your mouth is. You create your idea. It's a great idea. I think it's a genius idea, and it's totally to benefit the regional areas within whatever state or city that they're in at the time. So right now it's starting in St. Louis. They're focusing on St. Louis, but eventually they'd like to get into other parts of the country. So I think it's a really unique idea. And if you get a chance, I want everybody to go RallySTL is their Twitter handle, and RallySTL.org is their website. Go there, check it out. They got their little Twitter links and all that on RallySTL.org. So yeah, something really unique and different. I'll tell you what is not different right now, though, Justin.
Okay.
The thing that is not different or changing in this world is the Republicans' consistent butthurt tendency to lose an election, not be happy with the way the rules play out, and getting extremely angry about it. And now they're calling for impeachment.
Are they?
Impeachment, yeah. Justin. Impeachment.
Wow. For what?
Well, that's a great question. I think everybody in the United States of America has that question on their mind. Exactly for what? Because he passed Obamacare, or what you call Obamacare, is the Health Care Act. Because he passed financial reform. Because he killed bin Laden. What exactly? And I think they're going to try to hang it on Benghazi. They're going to try to hang it on something where, listen, every single year, bad things happen to people. Situations go sideways and awry. I tried to explain last week when I had on Drew from the John and Drew show that's on IndioSTL.com, as well as Travis Cook, the America's Evil Genius. I tried to explain to him this whole Benghazi situation is, you guys have to understand, Benghazi's an isolated situation. For 2 weeks, there was rioting in multiple cities throughout the Middle East before the Benghazi attack. So here's a situation where you have an area of the world that is really rioting right now, that is really amped up, and they are doing a lot of anarchy style and chaotic things. And now you have smart individuals who run terrorist organizations sitting off to the side going, if we ever needed a diversion tactic, when would be the best time to get one? Oh, right now, while it's going on. So while all these people are up in arms over there and parading through the streets and burning flags and beating each other and shooting each other and all this crazy stuff, the terrorists are smart. They're not illogical idiots. They're smart. They take advantage of the situation, Justin. They run in and they attack the embassy.
It's a terrible situation.
It is a horrible situation, and I don't think it's good at all.
But it's not a, you know, it was an attack on us. It's not a scandal by us. It's not a controversy. I know it happened before the election. The Republicans tried to use it to spin it into some crackpot conspiracy against America so that Mitt Romney might get elected, but that failed. So it's time to let this go. Just to act like this is worthy of all this investigation and there's a scandal and there's a cover-up.
There's not.
I don't recall, after 9/11, I don't recall the Republicans wanting to look into all the presidential daily briefings George Bush had warning of an al-Qaeda attack. You know, only 3,000 Americans died that day, so I guess that wasn't worthy.
It's just their, inherent need, Justin, I don't mean to cut you off, but it's just their inherent need to find something. Like, here's what I've learned about Republicans, and tell me what you think about this, okay? And I'm not knocking them. Like I said, I'm a moderate. I pull from the Republican Party. I pull from conservatives. I have certain fiscal attitude that is conservative, you know. But what I've come to find out about a true hardline, middle-of-the-road Republican is the fact that most of these guys are like your nosy neighbor in your neighborhood. They want to find out who you're dating, if you're having a baby or not. They want to know what's going on. And if they're not on top of it, in control, and talking about something, or they're not complaining about some dog pooping in their yard, which I've had that problem recently in the last few months with my neighbors walking their dogs and pooping in my yard. I've talked about that on the show. But if they're not worried about these things or creating something to be angry about, they're just not happy. Because literally, they're so focused on the business aspects of their life. They're so focused on, I'm going to work my 40-hour-a-week job, and I'm going to climb that corporate scale and make money and put savings away and all this stuff. But they come to realize very quickly in their early years of doing that, it's boring. It's boring to go to work every single day, to not like the job technically that you're doing, to sit there and get paid, $40,000 a year or $50,000 a year, but the caveat that comes with it is you have to sit in a cubicle for 8.5 hours. You can't play around on the internet. You don't get to goof with your friends and talk to them and hang out like you did in college and high school. It sucks. So the only thing that they have is, I just spent 8 hours in a cubicle. Now I'm angry.
Well,
now
you know,
I'm happy.
That speaks to the fact, too, the resentment built into conservatism. This week, the LA Times and the New York Times reported on Mitt Romney's phone call on Wednesday to his donors, just basically saying, hey, well, Obama won because he was giving everyone free stuff. He was offering poor people free health care. He was offering Hispanics to not deport their kids. He was offering stuff to the black community. He was just giving away free stuff, and that's why he won. Which
is, just goes okay. Let me talk about that. I love the fact that you brought this up. Okay, this okay. Listen. If there's things that I'm good at in this world, it's ranting on stupidity. Okay, you guys just spent the last year and a half explaining to black people via different ways that Barack Obama did nothing for the last 4 years. He did nothing. Nothing at all. Nothing to make you want to reelect him, and therefore he shouldn't be reelected. Not only were you telling this to black voters and minority voters, you were telling this to white voters. The guy did nothing. Hey, where were you? What was their famous line, Justin? What was their famous line for this entire election? Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago?
Oh, yeah.
And what was their claim? No, you aren't better off now. You're either in the same slot or worse. Okay. Well, here's a guy who did nothing for 4 years. So exactly what free crap did Barack Obama bring to the table over the last 4 years that he gave away to a bunch of minority and black voters to make them vote? Plus, we've already discussed on this show earlier, 24% of the total population in the United States is minority and black. Even if every single person who's minority and black voted, you'd still need 27% white people to have voted to get the 51% popularity margin. That's how serious it is.
Well, I mean, white men, I think, went something like 59% for Romney, but it was the only group, really, that he was ahead on. You know, yeah, blacks went to Obama, you know, something like 80-90%. Hispanics went to Obama, 71%. You know, the GOP has a real problem just in their Hispanic vote, the way it's gone the past three presidential election cycles.
By the way, anyway, I was ranting on your, like, what free stuff did they get? Like, don't know what free stuff they got. Free stuff?
I'm sorry.
Remember there's the famous video of Obama phone? The lady that, Obama's going to give us all free cell phones. Really? Where in the world did Obama mandate some policy to just give people free cell phones?
But that,
why isn't myself as well as a bunch of Tea Party people getting them?
Well, but that,
because it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist, but that kind of video or that kind of idea exists because of the resentment of these conservatives who believe that. I mean, if your rant is basically conservatives are having it both ways, you can have that rant on every issue we talk about politically. You know, Barack Obama hasn't done nothing for you after the election. Barack Obama just gave you free stuff. You know, for them, you know, it just proves Mitt Romney, the 47% video, was really who he is. He still thinks it's all about the moochers. But the whole base conservative movement, you talk about that worker working 40 hours a week, that's how they motivate him, is saying you're having to work so hard to give away free stuff to those people.
Here's what you get. You get a bunch of Republicans who are business owners, and they have it in their head because the way they run their businesses on a day in and day out purpose. I have a business where I have 30 employees. I'm a my way or the highway type guy. I like being in control and not being told what to do. And if I can mess with people however I see fit, even if that means writing them off of my life and firing that secretary, that's who I am. And I'm not saying that they're all just angry and running around at all times, angry and firing people. That's not the truth. But my point is that what happens is they get into the political side of things and they start thinking the same thing. They keep thinking that they're in control, that they're the bosses, that they're the ones that make the decisions. They're going to control this country and they're going to drive that ship. And you don't. What you control is Tommy and Bob's car wash on South Fifth Street. That's what you control. Tommy and Bob's car wash is all you control. You don't control anything that has to do with the federal government. And if you did, you'd be running for the presidency of the United States. But you're not. So you don't. And that's all there is to it. And you know what the difference between you at Tom and Bob's car wash on Fifth Street and Mitt Romney is? $800 million. That's the difference between you and him, because he is the guy who could potentially run that country. And so they get angry. They get bitter for two reasons. One, no control. They make no decisions and they can't do anything about it. And two, they realize there's richer guys than them out there and they still haven't gotten enough money in their pockets because that guy's got a million more than they have. So how did he get his million more, and why? That's not fair. It's not fair. It's not fair. It's all about, listen, they're the first ones to tell you when you come into work, hey, man, I need you to work on Saturday. Just like the movie Office Space. Hey, man, I need you to work on Saturday. Well, I got plans. And well, life's not fair, man. Life's not fair. First one to tell you life's not fair. And the minute that they don't get their way, oh, that's not fair. It's not fair. Yeah, life's not fair, people. Life's not fair in general across the board. Life's not fair that Bill O'Reilly gets to be a popular radio show host who's got millions upon millions of listeners, and Mark Bland has to bust his tail to get to the top, even though he's been in the radio and entertainment business for 18 years. Life's not fair, but you don't see me running around all day long, every single day, shouting the name of Bill O'Reilly to the depths of hell, trying to create a problem with Bill O'Reilly because I hate him or something. No, you don't. That doesn't happen. The only people I take pot shots at are Dana Lesh and Jamie Ullman. And that's because they're afraid of me and they refuse to put me on their show or come on my show to discuss politics and debate with us.
Why would you want to put yourself through that in the first place? You know, a running theme with me on your show, I think we're going to find, is conservative projection. And, you know, the conservatives like to project things onto their enemies that they are themselves. And a big thing with that, with the Tea Party, when you hear them talking about liberty and the tyranny of government, that Obama's a totalitarian, you know, complete fantasy land. But conservatives themselves are complete authoritarians. They love George W. Bush. They love Mitt Romney. They love the strong guy in charge who can come in and fire people and do whatever. You know, when they are in government, they don't mind the government going through our emails, listening to our phone calls, torturing people, whatever. They're complete authoritarians. But when the wrong team is in, oh, that's when they're picking up the mantle of individual liberty. They have it both ways, and they project their own worst traits onto their enemies.
Now, by the way, have you heard about John Metz, the franchisee owner, who, check this out. After Barack Obama's reelection, some business owners went so far as laying off workers and attributing it to fear of new taxes. See, we talked about that in the first hour before Aaron came on. We talked about this whole fear, scaring people into believing that there's something that there really isn't. Other employees vowed to reduce employee hours and other in order to avoid paying for their health care under the Obamacare. Now, I guess people need to understand the rule that these guys have a problem with is this new 30-hour rule. The rule is that if you work 30 hours or more for a company, you are allowed to take part in health care. Now, it's not universal health care, as we've discussed. It's privatized health care. So if your company has Blue Cross Blue Shield and you work 40 hours currently, you get health care offered to you under Blue Cross Blue Shield. Under the new rule, you're going to get health care offered to you under Blue Cross Blue Shield if you only work 30 or more hours. So there was the big deal that we talked about on the show about 2 or 3 weeks ago about Longhorn Steakhouses, Olive Gardens, and Darden, or whatever the name of the company is that runs them. They're going to cut a bunch of people to 28 hours, 2 hours less than 30, so that they don't have to pay them health care.
Yep.
So they can't be offered health care or anything. And with that being stated, I think it's – well, just hear this out. Those actions are despicable in their own way, but at least they may be defended as sort of a rational business move if it proves that that means something. But how exciting that one business owner has figured out a way to become a bigger a-hole on the issue than any of his peers. Check this out, Justin. John Metz, a Florida businessman who controls Dairy Queen, Denny's, and Hurricane Bars and Grills, has made a great progress in the a-hole business owner science of America. Okay? Simply reducing employee hours, raising prices, not enough. Check this out. John Metz said he will add a 5% surcharge to customer bills to offset what he said are increased costs of Obamacare along with reducing his employees' hours. If I leave the prices the same but say on the menu that there is a 5% surcharge for Obamacare, customers have two choices. They can either pay it and tip 15 to 20%, or if they really feel so inclined, they can reduce the amount of tip they give their server, who is the primary beneficiary of Obamacare. Okay.
Whoa.
So, okay, this guy already is taking into the account that people already have the choice to either give a big or a small tip. He's assuming that everybody gives these 15 to 20% tips. Nope. Some people do. Some people get a 30% tip. Some people get a 40% tip. But there's no, like, base that everybody gives a 20% tip. Some people only give a 5% tip already. So to even assume that is stupid. So John Metz, quite brilliant, we will actively encourage customers to tip less in order to make up for the cost of Obamacare that he is passing on to them. And Metz expresses hope that his plan will inspire employees rather than alienate them. What do you have to say about that? And I'm like, okay, dude, I get it, man. I get it. But you're just going to piss off a lot. Like, these guys really think that there's always going to be someone. Let's say you're a Republican and conservative business owner that hates Obamacare, right?
Right.
We all say that you already have a passive-aggressive tendency towards racism. We're not saying that you are racist. We say that there's tendencies there that we see that kind of rear their ugly head when you got a few beers in you on a Friday night next to a bonfire, or, you know, when you're hanging out with the boys in the locker room and you crack a black joke. Like, we see that you're thinking about it. It's in the back of your mind. That doesn't make you, like, racist. Like, you're not going around burning crosses and trying to kill black people. Like, that's not what the kind of racism we're talking about. We're talking about general ideas that you have this bigotry within your system. Now, okay, add on top of that situation right there, what happens if you piss off all your servers? You're eventually going to have to hire either people, like, okay, you got white people that are servers, right? But you piss all them off, and other white people don't want to serve for you because they kind of think that you're the D-bag. You're a D-bag. You know what I'm saying? So eventually you get the minorities that start coming in, like the Mexicans and the blacks and the African Americans, all these different cultures that will come in to take these jobs up. And we both know that Mexican Americans work very hard. They're very hardworking people. They'll take a job like that and they'll run it into the ground. Like, they will really, really work hard. But you're already kind of like a sideline bigot. So you're going to hire these guys on that you don't like because of their skin color. You're going to put them in a position where you have to pay them. And then you're already going to be angry at them and think it's an Obamacare thing anyway. Like, it's just anger on top of anger on top of anger. This is my personal opinion. I can't guarantee this will happen. I'm not saying that this is the way that it's going. I'm just saying that this is what I'm seeing. And I don't know if that's a good way to be. I really don't think that's a good way to be. I think, why don't we allow Obamacare, like I said earlier, to just happen for a month or two? Let's see what the actual costs really are. Let's stop playing the sky has fallen, Chicken Little scenario.
You know, Mark, every one of these business owners who's taken some action about the cost of Obamacare, whether it's Papa John, whether it's John Metz, whether it's the Jimmy John's franchise, every single one of them has lied about the cost of Obamacare to their business. This guy saying, you know, 5% is the cost of his Obamacare and take it out on your server.
Yeah, have you noticed that they're doing low numbers? Like, we talked about Papa John's, 50 cents per pizza, 5% total. Like, 5% on a $10 bill is what? 50 cents. That's my point. Like, they're even recognizing that they can't. Like, what they want to do is they want to put a 30% surcharge on there to really try to prove a point. But they know the minute that they do that, they're going to end up screwing their business and their clients. And they're going to drive people away naturally because too high. So,
but even the base number they're starting at is a huge exaggeration.
That's my point. You know? Even on the lowest end, they know they're just exaggerating themselves.
They're making a political statement. You know, they're being sore losers. They think of themselves as job creators and the owners of this and that. I welcome them to fail.
At what point do you separate business from personal? Like, I think you have to be really good at separating business from personal. You have personal, emotional attachments to politics that you are intrinsically throwing towards your business model. Your business model has worked up to now with probably some of these companies have been around 20 plus years. Like Domino's, 20 plus years. Papa John's, 20 plus years. So these companies have been around for a long time. And now, and that's through multiple presidents. That's through the Bill Clinton presidency. That's through the George Bush presidency. That's through multiple presidents. And you didn't have a problem until Barack Obama became president. We get it. See, like, we're not stupid. We see that you, like, if you had a problem during Clinton's presidency and now Barack Obama's, I'd be like, okay, it seems to be a liberal thing. But no, you didn't. You had a problem during Only Barack's. Not during Bush's, not during Clinton's, not during Bush 1, not during Reagan. Like, we get it. It's only one guy. You're only focusing your anger at one person. Listen, we got to take a break here on the show. Check out theqnow.com. I'm going to actually have a profile for Justin coming up here real soon. We got to get a pretty headshot of him. And check out theqnow.com. If you guys want to contact us, there's a contact page on theqnow.com. Contact that. You're listening to KYRO 1280 AM at CBS News. We're at the bottom of the hour. We'll be back right after this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to The Q. I am Mark Bland. You're listening to 1280 AM KYRO WestplexNewsTalk.com every single Saturday from noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, the blowtorch of the Midwest. That would be us here that you are listening to. Joined today by Justin Demming, DieMofo, at DieMofo, DieMofo on Twitter. You are the enabler. That's what we call you, the enabler.
Thank you.
Are you the enabler?
As a profession, yes, I manage a bar.
You manage a bar, and you are a radio talk show host who just happens to have a bar that's under your control.
Well, there you go. I'm a man of many hats.
You're a man of many hats. We are talking about all good things going on in the world today. Earlier, we had on Aaron Perlett. If you get a chance, you can always go to theqnow.com and listen to the episode if you miss something. You can always go there, take a look. I got my bio up there. We're going to have some stuff on Justin up there. We got the Breaking Point blog, but we have the episodes, all the old episodes. You want to hear me go toe-to-toe with Drew and Travis last week, two neocons versus one moderate lib? There it is. Episode 95. Go download it and listen to it every single week. You can find the newest episode of theqnow.com. I implore you to possibly go and check that out. That would be fantastic. And now you're going to have a new episode to listen to, this one. If you missed the Aaron Perlett interview from Elastic Agency doing the rallystl.org stuff, genius stuff. Genius stuff. I really think Aaron and them guys are really smart dudes. Okay. To get back to what we were talking about, did you hear about Hostess, Wonder Bread?
They're closing their St. Louis location.
Hostess, the maker of Twinkies, Ho-Hos, Ding Dongs, and other forms of grand American health food, is currently the target of strike by its workers. If you're interested in the particulars of the issue at hand, the union side can be found on the company's site, as well as the company side can be found on Hostess's site. But basically, the walkouts began after the bakery union employees rejected a unilateral imposed contract that would include wage benefit cuts of 27% to 32%. So basically, Hostess said, we're going to have to cut you guys down 27 to 32% of what you make currently right now. Now, mind you, I just explained, they have a union. It's a union that we're dealing with here. Now, I am not the biggest union bellwether. I am not the biggest union hater. I grew up in a union house where my dad was a union member. My grandfather was a union member. So union money put me through school. Union money paid for my clothing. Union money literally was a part of my growing up in the St. Louis area. But the same point, I realize in today's economic standards, Mark doesn't make $45 an hour for time and a half. Mark doesn't make $35 an hour for time and a half. Mark doesn't make a lot of things, okay? And there's a lot of people out there that make $10 an hour while a union person's making $22.50, $23.50, $24.50 per hour. They want to cut them down to $19 an hour. I don't see that being a big hamper. Now, I can understand if you're making $23 an hour and they want to cut you down to $21 an hour, you know what I'm saying, or $20 an hour. Okay, you're used to making $23 an hour. Now you're at $20 an hour. But in comparison to people who are making 10 an hour, I think you're doing okay for yourself. That's what I honestly believe. You're doing okay for yourself. And I love Twinkies. Let's be honest. Have you seen my gut? Have you seen my body? I am an Adonis for the wrestling world. And everyone knows that.
Well, I mean, look, if you're talking about a 25 or 27 to 32% cut from $22, that'll put you at $16 or $14.
True. It's going to get you a lot lower than I said. I mean, I undersold that. But at the
same point, I get it. For a job you've been doing, who knows, 5, 10, 20 years, to have your wages cut that significantly, especially if it's not a matter of survival.
Now, here's the story, Justin. Basically, the company Hostess basically says this. We simply do not have the financial resources to survive an ongoing national strike. Greg Rayburn said in a statement this past Wednesday, if enough striking employees don't head back to their jobs by Thursday at 5 p.m., which was this past Thursday, okay? And the company said it will, on Friday, seek bankruptcy court permission to launch a liquidation of the entire business. The shutdown will result in the loss of nearly 18,000 jobs. Now, this is kind of like the guys with the whole, I'm going to give my clients two choices. Pay a $5 surcharge or 5% surcharge and knock somebody on their tip. Or just don't patronize my business, okay? This is the same idea here. Either I can have all 18,000 of you lose your jobs on Friday. Done. No more job. Not making 16 an hour. Not making 14 an hour. Not making 10 an hour. You'll be making zero an hour. Not even on the board. You'll be making nothing per hour. Or you can play along with me and continue to keep your job making 16 an hour. At that point, as the union, I don't, like, unions don't understand. They don't control anything. At any time a company says they don't want to deal with a union, they'll just stop dealing with a union. It's that simple. They'll just stop dealing with a union. I understand the purpose of unions. I understand why they were implemented back in the 1930s and 40s. Hoffa, yeah, those people were making 5 cents or 10 cents, 15 cents a day. He was like, yeah, you guys need to be at least making a buck a day. You know what I'm saying? But then again, bread was only a penny a loaf. Yeah.
Well.
We're talking at a way different time period.
You're saying union members make more than non-union houses. But, you know, the reason even non-union wages are up are because of that history of unions in this country. The reason we have 40-hour work weeks is because of unions. The reason people have weekends off is because of unions. Pardon my voice, but
yeah, he's a little under the weather, but I understand what you're saying. Like, I get that. That makes sense to me. But I don't care about all that when it literally comes down to I can continue my job that I currently do making $17 an hour from 25. Or I can make $0 per hour 2 days from now. Because I want to be an a-hole and I want to push the issue. Okay. I'm defending
the workers and not the corporations.
I'm defending the people and I'm defending the corporations right now. In this case, the corporation came down and said, "Listen. Here's a contract of what we physically like here's our situation financially. We can't continue like whereas the Papa John's people raising 50 cents to offset Obamacare, that's this them not saying, hey, our doors will close because of Obamacare. That's this them saying, this is what we want to throw on top of an already okay situation. But in this case, with Hostess, this is a company physically coming to you going, okay, we have $10 in the bank. That's it. So if we can make the contract work for $10 in the bank, then we're good to go. But if it can't be worked out for $10 in the bank, then we are filing bankruptcy. We are done. This is not about Obamacare. This isn't about politics. This isn't about nothing. This is about either $10 in the bank covers the bills or it don't. And basically, that's where they're at. They're like, we need to cut everything 27 to 32% pay-wise across the board for everyone, including big dogs. And we know that ain't going to happen. We know that the guys at the top of the food chain ain't going to cut themselves 27 to 32%. But if it's for the betterment of 18,000 people, take the deal and renegotiate in a couple years when things get better. Do you see my point? Like, don't kill off 18,000 jobs because you're stubborn.
Well, who's killing off the jobs?
Hostess. The union is going to fight. What's going to happen is the union is going to push the issue over and over.
It's hostage taking. It's a hostage situation. And there's nothing that will prevent them from taking the same tact years from now. There's nothing that will prevent every company from saying, hey, lovely job you got there. Shame if something happened to it.
Okay, and that's fine. But here's the thing. Okay, so you're playing the Russian roulette game. Is the next bullet in the gun the one that's going to shut my job down, and instead of making 17 an hour, I make zero an hour, and I have to go find a new job? Or is this just a hostage tactic like you're talking about? Is it a ploy to try to get me beat down as a union member and try to get me to accept a lower wage for the same amount of work? Okay, what happens on Friday when it just shuts down and it wasn't a ploy? It literally just is done. They liquidate the company. There is no more Hostess Cupcakes. No more Hostess Twinkies. Like, Hostess is one of those very famous companies that's been around for years. Everyone has had a Hostess Cupcake. Everyone has had a Twinkie. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're not talking about a small, non... Like, Wonder Bread. Wonder Bread. That's Hostess. Wonder.
Uh-huh.
I mean, where... Like, Friday, that's all gone. And it wasn't a hostage ploy. Then those guys are going to be sitting there going, man... I could still have a job on Monday, still have health insurance, still have everything I'm supposed to have. I'd only be making 17 an hour instead of 24.
Wage concessions, benefit reductions, and the Teamsters union have already accepted concessions. They want more. You know, every time there's a big corporate union showdown, the union concedes.
Bull.
Concedes and concedes.
Oh, you and me both know that that is not true. In many cases, union people are paid almost 60 to 70% higher than the average working American. And I'm talking about people with degrees from colleges in the first few years of working for companies like Edward Jones and stuff like that. Like, these guys are making great money. There's no concession there. Listen, I know an individual who was a friend of mine who passed away a few years ago. His whole family worked for and works for not Laclede Gas, Union Electric, okay? He told me that there was a holiday weekend. I think it was a Thanksgiving, a few years. This was like in the mid-90s when this conversation was being had. There was a holiday weekend coming up, and he had planned on working it. I said, really, is that lucrative for you? He goes, I work an eight-hour day, and I make $60 an hour because they get double time. So that means his normal time is $30 an hour. And we're talking 1995, 96. Gas is 89 cents a gallon. We're not talking about expensive. We haven't gotten to the whole, because Obama's black, because Obama's a liberal, because liberals exist and they became president at all. Like, you had a liberal president at the time. You had Bill Clinton in there. Like, it wasn't a big whole world's coming to an end feel. So they weren't gouging people at the gas pumps and stuff like that. Like, yeah, $30 an hour back then was a lot of money, man. And $60 an hour at 8 hours a day? Yeah, bro, that's $480 for one day of work. That's some people's full week's paycheck. Some people take home a two-week paycheck of $800.
But
you see my point? Like, that's one day for that person. They've been doing this for years, and that was 1995.
So what are you marketing, that resentment that working people can actually make money?
No, there's no problem with working people. I think the unions have served their purpose and are now going beyond it. Their purpose now is more political. They are physically making more money than they necessarily need to. At a certain point, they are a gouge.
I would say the numbers contradict what you're saying. I would say that CEOs in America are making way more than workers to a historic degree.
Yeah, but you're talking about CEOs. You're talking about, like, you're equivalizing out the head of the union shop. You're equivalent to the highest guy on the union scale. Yeah, he's at the same level as most CEOs. But you got to realize, I'm taking a total.
We're talking about within a company, the CEOs are making way more than the workers. So when you're talking about these union guys make too much, all you're talking about is funneling more money upwards.
All right, fair enough. I'm going to throw a number out there. This is a guesstimate. Okay, this is not an actual number. I would say across the entire board, if you took every human being who has a full-time 40-hour-a-week job and you averaged out what the average amount of money across the board, from rich people to poor people, I would say the average person makes about $30,000 a year, somewhere in that range. I'd say between 28 and 31. Somewhere in there is what the average person working a 40-hour work week takes home every single year. Is about 28 to 31,000, somewhere in that range. Now, your average union guy on his first year, he's pulling down 35 to 40 on his first year. as he moves up the ladder, by the time he gets 5 to 6 years in, the same 5 to 6 years that move across the board for the person who's got the average job, they're only going to be at $31,000, $32,000, $33,000 a year. Because that's kind of where they move from 28 up to about 31, 33, somewhere in that range. This dude's going to be at 41 to 45 in a five-year period. Like, that's a lot. And we're talking about people that hammer nails, bro. I'm not knocking a trade labor person. I'm not knocking plumbers. I'm not knocking anybody who is a union trade individual at all for what they do. They do work hard, and they do deserve to be paid for it well. But what I do have an issue with is that literally – you nail nails into a board. A guy with a master's degree can nail nails into a board. And that person shows that they have responsibility and have put themselves through time and time again testing over a 8-year period to get that degree. So my point is this, Justin. Can you nail a nail into a board? Do you feel you have the ability to nail a nail into a board?
I'm very careful about saying that I can do perform jobs at a level at the same, you know.
I'm not saying that there aren't carpenters, there aren't plumbers, there aren't people in training.
I can hit a ball with a bat, but it doesn't make me a Major League Baseball player.
True, exactly. I understand that. But we're not talking about a Major League Baseball, you're a big baseball fan. A Major League Baseball player has to have eye-hand coordination. They have to have technique. They have to have experience. There's a lot that goes into it. To become a carpenter or a plumber or some of these other jobs like that.
HVAC, electrician. Okay,
even to become a fireman or a police officer. There's no technical skill that is required.
You've literally got to be kidding me.
Just train these individuals. Like, anyone can be trained to be a police officer. Anyone
can. Got to be kidding me. People no, seriously, try to anyone can be trained to be a police officer. Fail all the time.
Anyone can be trained to be a police officer. You literally go sit in the classes for the amount of time that they tell you to. You listen to all the things that they tell you, the numbers that you have to learn. And once you listen, it's just.
You just described college.
But yes, but no. See, the majority of people that are coming out of college are doing things like we're doing. Not everybody can be Mark Bland and rant the way I do and be Justin Deming and get on a radio and entertain and perform the way I do. No, you can't. Some people are timid. Some people are not timid. And yes, that is also true with being a police officer, a fireman, and a few other jobs too. But the difference is that I can't teach people to be outgoing. You can teach people how to recite a number back to them like 187 or a 5239. You can teach people to do that and say it into a microphone, and no matter how timid you are, as long as you can say those numbers, you have a job. As long as you're willing to put on the uniform and carry the handcuffs and put a can of mace on your hip, you have a job. Not every guy who does that could literally walk into a radio show like this nationally with thousands of listeners and entertain them and control them and keep them happy. Like, that's not – there's a difference there. There's a technique and a skill. It's like the difference between being me and Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt's got looks. He's got background. He's got connections. And those are things I don't have. I have connections. I have background. But I ain't got the looks for a Brad Pitt. So it's never going to happen. You can't just teach anyone to be a famous actor. It's just not happening. That's my point. Certain things you can teach people to do relatively easy. I can teach you how to use a miter saw, angle it like this, and cut your 45. I can teach you how to do that. I can teach anyone, no matter how timid you are or anything. But I can't make you speak louder. I can't make you speak animated. I can't make you – but listen, I love you, Justin. You're my boy, right?
Yeah.
You're very well known for a tattoo that you have on your body, right?
I am.
Now, anyone can get a tattoo, right, Justin? Anyone who's willing to sit down in the chair and can get tattooed. Is that not true?
I would argue that not everyone is capable.
Not everybody is willing. Not everybody is willing, but everyone has the ability to get a tattoo.
More or less.
Okay. But you are willing to go to the level that most people, even tattoo people that love tattoos, are not willing to go to. Not everyone can do what Justin did, is my point. The ability is there, but then there's always little personal caveats that will stop these individuals. Most of the jobs we're talking about don't require – like maybe policing, yes. Maybe fire department, yes. I'll give those guys a little bit of credibility and creed for the fact that, yeah, burning building that's like 800 degrees is a little scary, and running into there trying to pull a person's life out, yeah, there's going to be timid people that are just unwilling to do that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm speaking more from my own personal opinion as opposed to other people.
It's maybe a little scarier than hosting a radio show.
But it's not scary to grab a nail and a hammer and put a nail through a board, or to turn on a blowtorch and put some solder around a pipe. Like, there's nothing to – you don't have to be timid or
– I used to manage restaurants.
Yes.
And, you know, that is perhaps a profession that you would argue. You could teach anyone to serve, teach anyone to take an order, teach anyone to run a plate out to a table. It's not true. There are people who succeed wildly at it and people who fail wildly at it. And, you know, we had a saying back then, everyone thinks it's easy till they do it. You know, there are different skill sets in life and jobs. So I'm very cautious to say to any union member, you just hammer a nail in a board and anyone can do that, because I haven't stood in their shoes. I haven't done what they've done. And I think it's dismissive. I think we just have a different worldview here. To assume of other people in their jobs, you know. And even to my example, the restaurant, there were people who were wonderful servers who may have been dysfunctional in other areas of their life. There were people who were just terrible servers, could not learn to serve tables, who maybe went on to be doctors or lawyers, you know, once they completed their education, or writers.
Fair enough. Maybe I need to reassess my position on this, because I do agree with you. Maybe I went a little overboard with my rant on that, and I will take that personal stock on what you just explained, and I will reassess my opinion on that. I still, you know, and most of the time I'm talking from my own personal opinion. I'm talking from my own personal position in life and what I know that I'm able and capable to do versus what I'm not. Okay.
That's what kind of show this is.
And I know that I have the abilities to do things and the opportunities that were not beset upon me. Now, opportunities have been beset upon me that others will never get the opportunity for. But sure. At the same point, I am willing, like I said, I am a moderate. I can be swayed. I am willing to switch my viewpoint up a little bit based off of that. I don't think that I am so coarse and callous as an individual that I am unwilling to accept who I am as a person and change.
So, hey, if you entertain the notion, that's all I can ask for.
Fair enough. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an exciting show here on The Queue. Today, Justin Deming.
Hi, guys.
You're going to be joining me more often. Justin's going to be my newsman. He's going to bring in some stories that we're going to talk about each week, crack-wise, discuss, get controversial with sometimes. Sometimes it's just going to be fluff and fun. And he's going to be kind of helping me co-host The Queue here for a little while, just because I kind of need help, ladies and gentlemen. And I'd love to have you help me out, too. Donations are always appreciated. Go to thequeuenow.com, hit the contact page, contact me directly, or you can hit me up, mark@thequeuenow.com. We'll get Justin his own queue email address, so you can hit him up too. But regardless of that, don't forget you can follow him on Twitter at DieMofo, DeyeMofo.
That's it.
And he is the enabler. That's what they call him, the enabler of life. And he's a professional wrestling fan, just like my past. And so we love it. And by the way, I have an opportunity. An individual has approached me to talk to me about some stuff. We'll see what happens. I don't know what's going on. But I like kind of where it's going already. But regardless of that, ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to 1280 AM KYRO, The Queue Show with Mark Bland. Thank you so much to every single one of you out there that listens every single week. Don't forget to check out Savage Vibrations every Thursday on IndioSTL.com. That's IndioSTL.com. It's a show with me and Matt Kruger. Also, don't forget to check out the other great shows here on KYRO, WestplexNewsTalk.com. This has been The Queue for this week. Ladies and gentlemen, we will see you next time on The Queue. Hey, my main thing, got my last name, yada, da, main.